Every time I interviewed the grandmother, who was a witness, as the interview deepened, there would be a look of stark, horrendous fear come across her eyes that he said he could not explain. If in the mind of that old lady, she saw something in the way of these little characters, then she saw it.
You are now entering The Mortuary, the podcast that offers you an immersive discourse into the occult, the paranormal, and the Tanners of the world.
Ooh.
We are your hosts of horror on this journey into the darkness. My name is Brock, the Tanner Explorer Extraordinaire.
Wow.
Explorer of all deep, hidden Tanners.
And I am Tanner, what Brock is exploring. So
right now as we're recording this.
Yes.
We're naked.
Does this look infected?
That was such a weird opener.
It was. But I was trying exactly what you wanted, isn't it?
Yeah, because the first one didn't work. Mm-hmm. So did this one work? Are you feeling explored?
It was fine. This is fine. So, what is going on, my dude?
Oh, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Just trying to live my life without seeing you every day now. So
yeah, I know. It's pretty difficult. Hard. It's hard for me too, man.
Hard because I'm exploring you? Is it hard because...
your loving embrace every morning. So
the slow motion one?
Yes. With
the fields and...
yes. Frolicking and okay,
this is like
anyway.
The most uncomfortable intro ever.
Oh my goodness. Well, I am glad to be back.
What's up with you?
I'm glad to be back on the Mortuary podcast. We are going to talk about something pretty interesting today.
I have no idea what we're talking about because we don't see each other anymore, so I never get to talk to you.
I know. Well, you're going to find out, so just hold your little horses. I think me and you both, once this really gets going, we're going to be able to offer a unique perspective on this. But I do want to give, and I'm so sorry, I forgot who it was, but you will know who you are. Someone in the group did post about this.
What group could you be talking about?
Why, Enter the Mortuary on Facebook,
Course. That sounds like a really cool group.
It is, yeah. It's like, what, almost 500 members?
Over 600,
look at me. But they shared a meme that the meme itself kind of encapsulated this entire case into one kind of picture.
Okay.
And
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's called the Kelly-Hopkinsville encounter. It is what many people regard as an alien or UFO encounter. So shout out to whoever, you know, shared that in the group. I think Brock is furiously typing away on his phone, trying to find it. It's been probably a month. By the way, Brock does not have headphones today, so he will not know if he's being too loud or too quiet. He's just kind of going to be taking a shot in the dark as far as his audio levels go. So bear with us on that. But probably our listeners that have been with us like from the very beginning and who really know us,
you know who you are,
are aware of the unique perspective that we have on aliens or extraterrestrials. And
there's a band that's releasing a song about aliens.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. What band is that?
They're called Styx. No. My band actually, very soon we're called Double Cross. If you're a fan of like hardcore punk, metal, that kind of stuff.
Country music.
Yeah, you might like my band. But anyway.
It's like a mix between the Chainsmokers and Johnny Cash.
Yeah, exactly. With a little bit of Adele. But you know, I wasn't planning on getting onto a conversation about my band, but I did want to let the listeners know a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this podcast does find its way into, I write the lyrics. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff finds its way into our music. So that's fun. But anyway, me and Brock both kind of share the same perspective on aliens and extraterrestrials and UFOs in that we don't believe that they exist. And
in the
traditional pop culture sense, we think that, alien encounters, UFO abductions, are much more akin to what we would consider a demonic encounter or a demonic possession. And we'll probably talk more about this kind of stuff in the future.
Yeah, we're just really fucking getting into it, aren't we? Here we go.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't my intention, but I have pride and I can't let people think that I believe in aliens.
Yeah, because I gotcha.
Not in the traditional sense, because it's just something I'm passionate about, something that's important to me. I think that the idea of aliens is a deception, and it's to perpetuate certain false ideas.
That's just one leg of the larger deception.
Oh, it's just very much so. But that is a conversation for another day. That being said, we can go ahead and get into this. But I just wanted to...
Did you make your point?
Did I? Anyway, basically, this case is about aliens and extraterrestrials, but we don't believe that, again, like I said, that they exist in the traditional sense.
The only butt probing Tanner's a part of is my butt probing.
Exactly. But we don't believe that aliens come from outer space or, you know, I think UFOs could probably be explained by just
military vehicles,
stuff that we don't know about.
You can do
that we don't have access to.
Look into some of Tesla's blueprints from the early 1900s, and it's your stereotypical disc UFO is what he designed before any science fiction novels were written, and before that was like the pop culture standard for a UFO.
Sure. So, but Brock and I, well, I'll speak for myself, but, you know, I definitely believe that we live in a very spiritual realm and that there are other realms, and that, you know, I believe that maybe interdimensional beings are...
So why won't you let us open a portal in your house?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. But there's just so many issues with the idea of aliens coming from outer space. For example, you know, there's all these stories about cattle mutilations, right, happening in people's pastures and stuff. And it just doesn't make sense that this highly advanced species would come all the way from... you know, some planet that is trillions of miles away or whatever. They're so intelligent, they have this technology to make it to Earth, and then the first thing that they do is cut up a bunch of cows. You know, it's like there's so many issues with the traditional stories.
They want that Texas ribeye, brother.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is I think that the idea of being deceived that aliens exist is much more interesting and much more fascinating than the idea of aliens existing. Is that weird? I think it's almost more interesting that it could, because I think cattle probably have been mutilated by something, but I don't think it's aliens. I think it could be more mysterious than that, which I think that's interesting. I don't know.
But, I get what you're saying. I'm following you now. Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so we're going to go ahead and get into it. Again, this is the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter.
Okay.
The Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, aka Hopkinsville Goblins case, or the Kelly Green Men case, was a claimed close encounter with extraterrestrial beings in 1955 near Kelly and Hopkinsville in Christian County, Kentucky.
So real quick, just real like off the skull, like observation, off the dome. Thank you. 1955 was literally like the birthing of science fiction.
Yeah, because a big part of it was the Roswell incident, which did that happen before or after this? I can't remember.
I don't know.
But definitely the 50s was the birth of the science fiction, pop culture movement. But also we had
NASA being formed.
NASA, and then we had, who's the guy that started Scientology? Hubbard. Ron L. Hubbard. He was writing a lot of science fiction. A lot of people at this time were this was the very the beginning of.
There's a lot of buzz around space and and sci-fi.
Right. Well, and this was also the very beginning of the like the generation that would use psychedelics.
Yeah.
And so they were people were starting to experiment with psychedelics. Are we going to
get into how that correlates to?
Probably not.
Quote unquote alien encounters.
Probably not today, but eventually, I'm sure.
We'll see.
Maybe we will. But anyway.
Because that relates to it. Like, that's all part of it.
It does. Yeah. No, absolutely. So maybe we will. But I want to at least get through this case first.
Just off the dome observation, I find it interesting that this scenario happened at the peak of this fucking train driving through every time we record a podcast episode. At the peak of kind of like this, I don't want to say sci-fi movement, but really just like the birth of sci-fi, like science fiction didn't exist up until this point.
Well, and you know what, listeners, this might be too big of a drop. I'm sorry, of a bomb to drop on you. But when the deeper you start looking into, you know, the conspiracy stuff, like, I don't know how to say it, the truth, the matrix that's all around us, you're going to see that the science fiction movement was like completely engineered, and I love science fiction, you know, I mean, I love sci-fi, it's a great genre, but it was completely created with a purpose and not a good one. So anyway, that being said, moving on, ufologists regard it as one of the most significant and well-documented cases in the history of UFO incidents, while skeptics say the reports were due to, quote, the effects of excitement and misidentification of natural phenomena such as meteors and owls. The United States Air Force classified the alleged incident as a hoax in the Project Blue Book files.
You said owls?
Owls. Yeah, okay. Which is so funny to me because, of course, they're obsessed with owls, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay.
Because, I mean...
I'm going to rabbit trail again.
I was going to say, for listeners who may not understand that significance, I mean, Bohemian Grove, the Illuminati,
yes, Drake. They worship owls, they love owls,
so
it's very occult, you know.
And also it aliens and owls makes me think of Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind,
yeah,
you know, where the white owl would always appear right before.
Oh yeah, they knew exactly what they were doing when they did that.
Sorry, go to your rabbit trail.
Well, my rabbit trail was gonna be the broom thing, the broom
that
challenge.
Just happened. That okay. whole, oh my God.
There was some interesting, stupid. There's interesting symbolism there because, first of all, NASA comes out and says that you can only do this, you can only balance your broom on the bristles. And you know, me and Brock know NASA as nothing but liars and frauds. And so they come out and say, only on this particular day because of, you know, Earth's gravity, all the planets are aligned in a certain way. And turns out you can do the broom trick on any day of the year. It has nothing to do with what NASA said, but you know, you can't tell that to all of the millions of people that were trying it, you know? And so, but the interesting symbolism there is that if you really look into the roots of NASA, the origins of NASA, there's a lot of witchcraft involved.
Broomstick.
And so of course it's a broom, right? The traditional historical symbol of a witch. And so that's I thought funny. That was interesting. Okay, so the United States Air Force classified the alleged incident as a hoax in the Project Blue Book files. Psychologists have used the alleged incident as an academic example of pseudoscience to help students distinguish truth from fiction. So, of course, you know, academia is always there to guide our, you know, malleable. Well,
they're the final
minds.
Say in what's real and what's not.
Of course.
How could you possibly decide that for yourself?
Right. So that was just kind of a brief synopsis of the case from Wikipedia. You know, Wikipedia is not the greatest source ever, but it's a fine source when you're just kind of trying to get the summary of.
It's a fine source when you're trying to run a podcast.
Yeah. it really is, because you can't be like copyrighted or, you know, sued or anything for using
it. It's good for brief overviews.
Yeah. So, there's this website called thinkanomalous.com, and they have a really good write-up on the case, and there's a lot of info here, so I might kind of
jump around, filter
yeah. through some of it, but I'm just going to start, and we'll do a little bit of commentary. And there's going to be a little bit of overview as well. But anyway, in the mid-1950s, two families in rural Kentucky made headlines across the country when they told police that their home had been approached by small metallic creatures that could not be killed or scared away. The media coverage of the incident helped draw attention to neglected reports of UFO landings and entity encounters, and the strange goblin-like creatures excited the public imagination. At the same time, however, hostile and sensationalized reporting on the incident served to discredit stories of contact with anomalous entities and helped erect the veil of ridicule that now surrounds them. Okay, the encounter. In the fall of 1955, 50-year-old Glennie Langford lived in a simple farmhouse about 12 kilometers north of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, in the small hamlet of Kelly. She owned a small farm about 400 meters from each of the nearest neighbors and lived with her son from her first marriage, who ran the farm, and his wife, Aline, as well as her three children from her second marriage, Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary. They kept a few pigs, a dog, and some farm cats. The family had no radio, phone, or TV, and their only water came from a well in the backyard. On the evening on August 21st, 1955, Miss Langford had a number of guests staying at the house. Elmer Sutton, the eldest son from her first marriage, and his wife, Vera, as well as Elmer's friend, Billy Ray Taylor, and his wife, June.
These are such old-time names.
Oh, I know, right? Elmer.
Vera?
Yeah, right. So they had, there was about 11 people total staying with them. Miss Langford did not allow liquor in the house, and no one was drinking. So they can't blame this on, you know, people just being drunk out of their minds, right?
She was a good Christian woman.
That's where it gets interesting. Billy Ray, went out to the well for a drink of water and saw a bright silvery...
Are you telling a fucking nursery rhyme right now?
No, this is really... Billy Ray saw a bright silvery saucer-shaped object gliding silently through the air. It flew 9 to 12 meters off the ground and left behind a trail of multicolored exhaust. The object flew in from the south and stopped over the neighbor's field to the north of the farm. It then descended straight to the ground and appeared to settle into a gully some 90 meters from the house, though Billy Ray could not see it land through the trees. He ran inside and told the others that he'd seen a flying saucer, but everyone told him it was just a meteor. Within an hour of the sighting, the dog began barking violently, and Billy Ray and Elmer went out to the backyard, to the back door to investigate. The dog ran into the house with its tail between its legs, and the men noticed an eerie glow approaching from the field. As it came nearer, they could make out the figure of a small creature, about a meter tall, with a large, round head resting directly on its shoulders, and long arms that reached almost to the ground. It had huge hands with talons on its fingers and large, floppy ears. Its eyes pointed 45 degrees out from the center and emitted a yellow light. Its upper body was muscular, but its legs were thin and spindly and had no knees. The entire creature was silver in color and gave off an eerie glow in the darkness. The creature walked slowly to the house with its arms raised to the sky, so Elmer grabbed his 20-gauge. Of course Elmer grabbed his 20-gauge. Single-barrel shotgun, and Billy Ray grabbed a .22.
What in the hell is that? Billy Ray, go get the shotgun! God damn it, Bob! What the hell
is that? Get our shotgun, man!
Goddamn commies!
They moved inside the back door and shot it when it came within 6 meters of the house. The men claimed that the creature did a backwards somersault, then fell to all fours and ran back into the weeds around the yard.
Okay, wait, like, it did a backwards somersault because it, like, was hit by the shotgun, or it did it to fucking dodge it, and then, like...
I don't know, it's not clear on that.
And, like...
That'd be amazing if it was that much of a ninja, you know? Billy Ray went back inside with Elmer, who gave his gun to JC and grabbed the 12-gauge shotgun. Billy Ray and JC then shot a creature peering in through the window, which also flipped backwards and ran away. The men went out the front door to see if they'd killed the thing, but as Billy Ray walked out past the overhanging roof, a clawed hand reached down and touched his hair. Aline pulled Billy Ray back inside, and Elmer ran out and shot the creature on the roof. Billy Ray then noticed a second creature on a branch of a maple tree in the yard, and the men shot it. They said the creature didn't fall, but floated to the ground, so they shot it again, and it scurried off into the weeds.
This sounds eerily similar to, like, Signs.
I'm going to talk about Signs in a second.
All right, sorry.
Which,
obviously, this happened before the movie came out, so I'm not...
Sure, sure.
I'm just observing.
It might have been inspiration for it.
Maybe so.
Elmer shot it at almost point-blank range and said that it sounded like shooting a metal bucket.
So it was a ricochet, though? Like, did he get... None of these people got injured.
Well, we're going to find out.
Okay.
Later, the men shot another creature on the roof. When they hit it, the creature floated 12 meters across the yard and landed on the back fence, then scurried away when they shot it again. The men gave up on trying to kill the things, but for the next 3 hours, the creatures repeatedly approached the house, climbed over the roof, and peered in through the windows. The witnesses noticed that the creatures only approached in the cover of darkness and did not step into the glow cast from the yard lights. They had two distinct forms of locomotion. When approaching the house, they walked slowly with an upright posture. After being shot, however, they dropped on all fours and, quote, ran away by propelling themselves with their arms and rather than their legs. The beings seemed to give off more of a glow when shot, and even when simply shouted at. There were never more than two of them seen at once. So how do you feel about that so far?
It's, I mean, like, it's a pretty interesting, like, imagery, like, as you tell the story, like, trying to imagine it in my brain, because all I imagine is the Signs house out in the middle of a cornfield with, like, these little metal creatures, like, running around and peeking in. I find it interesting that they wouldn't step out into the light. So to me, that tells me, like, how good of, like, I guess, or how well were they actually able to see them, to identify them?
Right. Well, there was the one, though, that got was point blank, you know, and they were able to describe what it looked
like. But again, you know, it's just hard to tell. I don't really know what to make of it.
Right. So,
I don't know why they would lie about it.
You said it reminded you of Signs.
Yeah.
I wanted to insert a little film theory here because it touches on what we were talking about at the very beginning of this podcast about aliens actually being demonic entities, right? Okay. So there's like a really good, have you ever seen those film theory videos on YouTube where it's like a guy basically
like dissecting a movie,
and creating different theories about the movie?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they're really well done. Sometimes it's a big time.
Is there
reach.
A specific channel that you like?
No, and I think that the video that I'm talking about wasn't even from this from that guy. I think it was a different YouTuber who's less well-known. But either way, there is a film theory out there about the aliens and Signs actually being demons. And there's a lot of reasoning for this, but a couple of the biggest reasons that I thought were interesting was that, first of all, Mel Gibson's character is a former priest. Do you remember how long has it been since you've seen Signs?
Oh, God,
been a long
time. I don't know. At least... I mean, before Delilah was born, so I mean, I would say maybe anywhere from 8 to 10 years plus.
Well, do you? I'm sure you remember him being a former priest who's like struggling,
right?
Because,
like,
his wife died,
yeah,
and so he's struggling with his faith. He kind of he leaves the church, isn't necessarily like an atheist, but he's
struggling as a single dad with his brother, and
So that's an interesting to me, an interesting element whenever you look at it through this lens, because. You know, it's about...
He's at a weak point, so why wouldn't demons be...
Exactly, and it's also about a spiritual... It's a spiritual battle that's happening, right? But also, if you notice, it's not just water that the alien that hurts the aliens, okay? Mm-hmm. Because if you remember, Mel Gibson's character, his daughter, Bo...
Mm-hmm.
She had this really weird habit of getting a glass of water, taking a sip from it, setting it down,
leaving it all over the house,
and leaving a bunch of cups everywhere. And so ultimately, those are the cups that they use to, like, kill the aliens,
right?
By throwing the water on them. Well, Bo being...
Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen Signs.
Everyone's seen Signs. But Bo being a young a little girl, she's innocent. And so she's every time she takes a sip from the water, she's blessing it, right? So it's holy water, essentially. Does that make sense?
I mean,
and so when the holy water touches these demons, it hurts them, you know, because why would water hurt an alien entity, you know? So I don't know. Thought that was kind of, there's a lot more to it, but I did think that was pretty interesting.
No, it definitely is.
So, anyway, okay. So moving on, they ended up calling for help. Okay. By about 11 o'clock, the group was becoming hysterical. So they piled into two vehicles on the premise and drove to the Hopkinsville police station. The officers on duty remarked that everyone looked to be in shock, which would be really hard to fake. You know, it'd be really hard to act. The officers immediately called the chief of police, Russell Greenwell, and then notified the Kentucky State Police. Greenwell, two state troopers, and all of the witnesses but June Taylor, who was particularly shaken, drove back to the scene. The Christian County Sheriff's Office was also sent a deputy sheriff and called the staff photographer at the Kentucky New Era, which is a local newspaper, who arrived with his wife. Four military police from Fort Campbell, a reporter from Madisonville, and one or two curious locals also arrived.
Why is there just this massive entourage of people all of a sudden showing up?
I don't know. I guess there's probably not a lot going on in rural Kentucky in the 50s. On the way to the farmhouse, one of the state police said that he heard a whining sound like artillery fire and saw two streaks of light flying downwards to the farm. Later, the officer claimed that these were only meteors. Several other locals said that they had seen meteors that night as well at different times. And see, to me, that's just signs from the heavens, you know? Okay. The small army of witnesses, reporters, police, and investigators converged on the farmhouse and flooded the scene with light. The witnesses remained outside while Greenwell led the investigators in a search of the house, yard, and some of the surrounding fields. Though they saw evidence of a firefight, they found no evidence of the creatures. However, Greenwell and others found a small patch of grass by the back fence that was luminous at a certain viewing angle, which was later suggested to be a type of bioluminescent fungus. Coincidentally, you know, of course. Greenwell, who'd had his own UFO sighting in 1952, believed the witnesses had seen something strange, but he had no proof of anything. Investigators began to leave once it became clear that there was nothing left of the creatures, and by about 2 a.m., the exhausted witnesses were finally free to sleep. Around 2:30, Miss Langford was lying on her bed with her head towards the window when she noticed a light from outside. When she opened her eyes, she saw one of the creatures peering in with its claws on the screen.
Hello, Clarice.
Hello, Clarice. Yeah. When she notified Elmer, who shot in spite of her protestations. That's a weird word to say. More shots were fired in the next 2 hours, but the creatures were not deterred. They showed no hostility whatsoever and never once attempted to enter the house, only to look inside. They were last seen just before dawn, around 5 a.m. Any thoughts?
So they were only there for this one night.
Right.
Okay. And they never actually entered the house. They just kept peeking in through the windows and trying to just, I guess, stir these people up more or less.
Right.
Man, I don't, I could do a lot of speculation on it, but I honestly don't have any solid response based off of any evidence that you've provided.
Yeah.
You know, with my belief of military or as UFOs being military vehicles, I think it's fair to say that there's a chance that, you know, this could have been some sort of military suit being used.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get to that
operation. So, but I mean, other than that, even that though, to me is a pretty far stretch.
Right.
I don't really have any other thoughts. It's just, it's really odd, you know, and I don't know what this family would have to gain from the story in 1955 by trying to, you know, make it happen. And so I'm interested to see what else you got.
So later that morning, investigators returned for a more extensive search of the grounds and the story hit the news. It was first reported by the local radio station WHOP in their early morning broadcast, and their news reporter interviewed the witnesses later that day. Bud Ledwith, the engineer and announcer, arrived the same day with the station owner's son. He spoke with Langford and the Sutton women and drew a sketch of the creatures based on their descriptions, documenting the witnesses' earliest recollections. Ledwith later did two more sketches based on the men's suggested corrections. Over the next few days, newspaper and radio reporters poured into Hopkinsville from Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. An officer from Campbell Air Force Base arrived on the scene after hearing WHOP's coverage, though the Public Information Office denied that there had been an official investigation, which is kind of weird. Greenwell also claimed that two men arrived from Standiford, a commercial airfield. Despite the attention, the family declined most interviews, as did most of the neighbors. Some neighbors, however, claimed to hear gunshots, and another saw lights from the farm shortly after Taylor's sighting. Investigators found nothing, not even a footprint of the little creatures, but other forms of evidence went undocumented. For example, there was no effort to collect the bullet casings littering the house and yard. On the second day after the incident, Project Blue Book, the UFO research group of the U.S. government, put out a press release claiming that there was no basis to the story. No official Air Force report, and no investigation underway. It is now listed in the Blue Book files as unidentified. And that's something that kind of triggers me, because we've seen that happen so many times where it's very, the government, especially the U.S. military, is very like, nothing to see here,
yeah,
folks.
Just move along.
Move along, yeah. Still, the media coverage created a buzz and drew sightseers from the area. And again, that's the thing, is all this, you know, all this buzz and hysteria, it never just happens out of nowhere. You know, it all stems from something. And of course, it could be stemming from a hoax, but again, it's just so hard to believe that these people were so mortified and were so in shock, and that's on record, yeah. You know, and that they were able to. And then what's the motive? You know, that can't be financial. This is before aliens were big business, you know?
Possibly fame, like just to be local.
Maybe so, but sorry. Excuse me. Much of the reporting was inaccurate and often hostile, especially in the national press. Reporters referred to the unknown entities as little men and exaggerated their number and intent, which I can totally see that. The media, you know,
absolutely.
Is no stranger to exaggerating for headlines. A few papers said that there were 12 to 15 of the things, and most described the event as an invasion, despite the creature's nonviolent nature. Out-of-state papers referred to the creatures as little green men, a term used in Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, even though no one had described the beings as green. Despite the flippant coverage from government and journalists, the case received at least one through investigation. In June of 1956, Isabel Davis, an investigator with Civilian Saucer Intelligence, spent 4 days in Hopkinsville with a follow-up 10 months later. She spoke with Glennie and Aline, the only two cooperative witnesses, as well as Ledwith, the neighbors, a few reporters, and the three police departments on the case. Davis also later obtained all Air Force documents on the Kelly Landing case, which showed that the commander of the Air Technical Intelligence Center at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, home of Blue Book, requested information on the incident in 1957. After learning of Davis's upcoming report, the reply confirmed that a reserve officer had visited the scene but made it clear that the higher-ups didn't believe in saucer landings. Hynek, however, who worked with Ledwith on another project and read Davis's manuscript, took a personal interest in the case and discussed it in The UFO Experience, which was a book, I guess. Davis produced the definitive report on the Kelly Hopkinsville incident and Close Encounter at Kelly, which was published by the Center for UFO Studies in 1978. So I'm going to kind of wrap it up, and then we'll do a little bit. I want to talk about a couple of things.
Before we get into that, let's take a break.
Okay, sure.
So this is the part of the show where we take a moment to tell you about all the horrific things that you can find inside the mortuary.
Did you know that you can leave us voicemails any time of day or night, 24/7? You can call us to share your favorite creepypasta, personal horror story, or maybe tell us a topic you want to hear covered on a future show. No matter the reason, give us a call and we'll play it on an episode of The Mortuary. That number is 202-838-7689. If you want to be anonymous, then don't leave your name. We just want to hear what you have to say.
And if you're watching this on YouTube and you're not familiar with the podcast realm, there's a much better way to get terrified by our content. With a podcast app like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, you get complete control over your listening experience. Not only that, but when new episodes become available, they are automatically downloaded to your device and you get notified about them. And if we're not on your favorite podcast app yet, let us know so we can be.
We love our content and hope you do too. If you can't get enough of The Mortuary or want to show dedication to all things macabre, consider becoming a patron of the show through Patreon. Patreon is a membership platform that allows us to build better relationships with our fans.
That's you.
While providing mortuary exclusives to our subscribers, aka patrons. When you subscribe to the $1 a month tier, you'll not only get a shout out on a future episode, but you'll get access to weekly mortuary episodes. We also have a $5 a month and $25 a month tier that gives you access to exclusive merchandise and future special releases along with weekly episodes. Your financial support of The Mortuary allows us to create a better show and additional content for you to enjoy.
Tanner and I wouldn't dedicate hours upon hours of our time and energy every week to the show if it wasn't for ghoulishly amazing listeners like you. Every time you tell a friend about us, like and share a post, or leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, you're not only helping out our show, but sending shivers down our spines in the best of ways. We're just two guys who love talking about creepy things and conspiracies, so don't be afraid to connect with us on social media. In fact, we want to see where you listen to The Mortuary, so post a picture of you listening to our podcast and then share it with us using the hashtag #EnterTheMortuary. That way we can share it on our social media accounts. And while you're at it, be sure to also join our Facebook group, Enter the Mortuary. There, you can partake in episode-specific conversations and more creepy talks with other podcast fans. And it's a closed group, so you don't have to worry about your grandma seeing your vast knowledge of serial killers or obsessions with the occult.
To join our mailing list or the latest blog posts and exclusives, head over to themortuarypodcast.com. Thanks for indulging us. Let's get right back into the show.
Okay, so I have a couple of theories now that you've elaborated more. Or I just have one, I guess, other theory that...
Can you save it for, like...
Yes.
Just a second?
Yeah, I'll shut up.
Because let me wrap this up.
Sorry.
The case has no easy explanation.
Big dumb brat.
Most UFO sightings end up being explained as misidentified natural phenomena, such as planets and meteors, but it's impossible to account for the Kelly Hopkinsville goblins with any natural causes. It is extremely difficult to believe how any person, object, or animal could have been seen and shot at so many times for so long a period and still mistaken for a shiny floating goblin. Still, the debunker Joe Nickel has suggested that the creatures were merely great horned owls defending their territory. How these owls survived multiple gunshots is left unexplained.
No, I don't know if I buy that explanation.
Right. Others have suggested that it was a hoax. Yada, yada, yada. At the same time, there is no physical evidence to verify the eyewitness accounts, not even claw marks on the ground or the house's corrugated iron roof. However, this is important right here. The ground was dry and hard, and even the investigators left no footprints on the scene. What's more, the witnesses showed clear signs of shock and terror. One of the medically trained investigators who rode to the farmhouse with Billy Ray measured his heartbeat at 140 beats per minute, twice the normal average. All but one of the 11 family members saw the silver creature for themselves. Investigators found no signs that the witnesses were intoxicated in any way and had ruled out drug-induced hallucinations. And that's where I'm going to wrap it up.
Ah, okay, okay, okay.
But let me hear your theory. I'm interested.
Okay, now I have two, right? So NASA was formed in 58. And what are you doing?
Gum.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
It's a podcast. Why are you opening gum and chewing gum?
I'm not going to chew into the mic. Our listeners don't care anymore.
Chewing, fucking. All right. NASA was formed in 58. So I believe that the United States government was already into basically forming some sort of space program prior to 58, obviously.
Right.
Especially with like high jump and fishbowl. So those are military operations. So research operation fishbowl, operation high jump, if you don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know, and then when you look at like the Manhattan Project or
Montauk.
Sorry. Thank you. That was all about portals, opening portals
to different dimensions.
Same with CERN.
Right.
So, but obviously that's way far ahead of 55. So who's to say that in 55, there wasn't some sort of portal developed prematurely, something went wrong, and something interdimensional came through.
Yeah.
Now,
that's a great theory.
That though, I don't believe the United States government had the technology for that in 55. Necessarily. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm just saying I personally don't believe that they had that level of or that advanced technology at the time. Since this is prior to the psychedelic movement and really at the early age of that, I think it's more believable that the United States government had basically drug-induced this family without them knowing to observe their reactions and observe their behaviors.
Right.
I find that much more believable because if you don't believe that the government would do that, then you haven't researched Mockingbird or MKUltra.
So the medical examiner didn't find evidence of any drug-induced, you know, but it could be rigged.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, to me, that's not necessarily 100% sell.
Right. I just want to make sure to point that out so people aren't like, you're contradicting yourself, you know.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying these are just two theories.
Yeah.
That there was a, you know, some sort of very primitive portal opened, and not that opening a portal is primitive in any way, but just primitive compared to where the technology is at now. And something came through, and they just took them, you know, 24 hours to get control of the situation. Or the government had basically drugged this family to observe the effects on their mind.
Yeah.
In a group setting, you know, instead of just individuals seeing how a whole group reacts, you know.
Yeah.
Those are my two speculations after hearing your talk.
Yeah, so and I think that's great speculation. Those are great points.
Fucking wrong, bro.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I think the truth is probably a lot closer to that than it is to little green men that came from outer space.
You know, metallic Mario's.
I don't understand the metallic thing because that's just so weird and so like,
what if
not in line with our traditional view of aliens?
What if?
Okay.
Hear me out. What if they just painted a bunch of midgets in metallic paint after drug inducing this family? And they just put like confetti rounds into all their shotguns without them knowing.
Yes.
And so they
got
all
these. And then
there
was someone with a bullhorn out in the woods.
Listen, if it was 1950s midgets, I'm willing to bet money that they were circus midgets. So they could do the backflips.
Right. Well, I was going to say, and there was someone in the forest with a bullhorn making noises. Joking, so. And they were going, pink, punk, pew. You know? The bullets were bouncing off the metal, the metal body. Okay.
Please don't get mad at me for saying that. Please don't come at me for that. It was a joke. I don't really feel that way.
Well,
I was trying to be silly.
We don't call them midgets, Brock.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Don't come
They're
for me.
Because
once
people.
I said it, I was like, that's not politically correct. I apologize. Proceed.
God, swine. Anyway. I just lost my train of thought.
Sorry. You're just thinking about
what I was saying was
midgets doing backflips.
Well, I don't understand the metallic part, and that is that makes me think that there's something military there. I can't put my finger on it, but just that's just weird. And again, that's so not in line with our traditional view of aliens. We usually view them as being fleshy or scaly or
the gray bodies
or a gray. Yeah. But not like robots, right. You know? So that's kind of weird, but, I don't know, man. I definitely don't think that it was a hoax. I think something happened. Okay. But I also don't think that they were shooting at owls and thought that it was.
I know. There's no way.
Like, if you mistake something, like let's say you saw a gorilla in North America in the woods and you thought it was Bigfoot because it had escaped from a zoo.
But why would owls attack a house?
No, I understand. No, what I'm saying though is that if someone mistook that gorilla who had escaped from a zoo for Bigfoot and they went and told everyone, "I saw Bigfoot," they're not lying. That's not a hoax, you know, right. Because it was a mistake and anyone would have made that mistake.
Right.
So what I'm saying is I don't think it was a hoax and I don't think it was owls, but I do think something happened and they gave their best 1950s interpretation right. of what happened because it was
they
so.
They gave their truth for it.
Yeah, they gave their truth. Right. Yeah. So, but that's really all I have for the Kelly Hopkinsville case. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, you brought up a point at the beginning.
Okay.
Was the connection between psychedelic drugs and aliens and extraterrestrials.
Which I feel like we've touched on this several times throughout different episodes, but not.
We have.
We've just kind of skimmed the surface real briefly in passing, I feel like.
Okay, I have two really interesting theories. The first one is more surface level. The second one is deeper. These aren't really theories. This is based on something.
Your beliefs.
It's not something I conjured up in my little brain.
It's based off of what?
So the CIA has been using psychedelic drugs on the public for a long time. This is documented. This is not
conspiracy. We're going on 60 years here?
Uh-huh. This is not conspiracy. I mean, there are documented reports of the CIA experimenting with psychedelic drugs.
CIA documents.
Yes. In small towns where they literally dosed the water supply with small, like micro doses of psychedelic drugs, like acid, you know. I mean, the CIA created acid, you know. Like, that's what I want. That's one thing I definitely want people to take away from this, that if you're doing acid, you know, recreationally, you're doing what the CIA wants you to do. But, you know, the CIA confirmed has done that kind of experimentation. So, Brock, have you seen, I know you have, we've talked about it before. It was that documentary about the little girl who got kidnapped by their family friend. Do you remember what I'm talking about? I'm blanking on the name. And this was back in like the
beauty pageant girl, was it?
No, this was like back in the 70s. Oh my goodness, it was a big deal when it came out. I'm so sorry, listeners. I'm sure the listeners know what I'm talking about.
Give me more details.
It's back in the 70s and she's alive now, and so she tells the story about it. It was a family friend, and goodness, hold on, listeners, bear with us. We're gonna figure this out. We're gonna find it. It was on Netflix. Netflix doc. Girl who was kidnapped by family friend.
Was it the abducted in plain sight?
Okay. Did you ever watch that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that. Yeah, it pissed me the fuck off.
Right. Okay. So in the documentary, the lady talks about how this guy who had kidnapped her. He converted his van into a mock, like, flying saucer alien laboratory. And I promise, guys, this is relevant. I'm getting at something here. And he had recorded on speaker, like, this alien voice to basically inform the girl who was going to wake up after being drugged in this mock UFO flying saucer alien laboratory. She wakes up and this speaker is saying, like, I don't remember what name he used, but it's like, "I am Mork from the planet so-and-so, and I have come to Earth, and you are going to be the savior of, you know, the human race or something, but you have to you know, we're going to have to breed, or I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's insane. And you find out, you know, she's a little kid and she's thinking like, it's this genuine abduction. Like she has been abducted by aliens.
Right.
And turns out the whole time it was just this family friend who was a pervert, a pedophile, who had concocted this entire setup to really brainwash this girl, like mentally, like traumatize her.
Yeah.
And,
MK Ultra.
Right. So what I'm getting at is, if this random guy who has, you know, he's just a random guy can do something like that, I truly believe that a lot of the pop culture movement was a psyop, psychological operation by the CIA to experiment on people, right? And right. to make them think that they were just abducted by aliens, and it was a way to experiment with MK Ultra and see what drugs could do. So that's my like surface level idea. And again, this is based off of actual research.
Well, and nobody would come after the government because it's aliens.
Yeah, exactly. It was aliens, right? But also to go deeper into it, listeners, this is something again that I'm pretty passionate about. I've done a lot of research on this kind of thing, and coming from a, you know, spiritual Christian background, I've done some research into astral projection and astral projection and what am I trying to say?
Like spirit communication,
lucid dreaming.
There you go.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, and then of course psychedelic drugs and
opening your third eye.
Right. So there's basically a movement going on right now. I mean, it's been going on really since the 60s. And even then, its roots are rooted in, you know, much more ancient kinds of ideas. But as far as in America and part of being pop culture, started in the 60s, but it's really popular today because a lot of people, especially in our generation and younger, are not identifying as Christian or atheist anymore, or even Buddhist or Muslim. A lot of people are starting to identify as just spiritual, right? Because a lot of people have like rejected the church or are like
disorganized religion in general,
dissatisfied with organized religion, and rightfully so. You know, I understand that. I can get behind, or I can understand it. But humans have this innate need for spirituality. It's wired into us, you right. know. We want to believe in something more. And so a lot of people are just saying, well, I'm spiritual. Well, when you don't have some kind of guide or some kind of foundation for your spirituality, it's really easy to get suckered into a lot of things that maybe, I'm trying to not be offensive, but things that maybe aren't healthy.
It's easy to get deceived.
It's easy to be deceived, exactly. So a lot of people in what is called the New Age movement, which is basically this just modern spiritual movement that is not like rooted in Christianity or anything else like that. It's just this modern spiritual movement of people trying to search and seek, you know, it's led a lot of people to experiment with psychedelic drugs. And me personally, especially when you do research and look into a lot of the accounts that these people talk about, they meet up while they're on their trip, whether they are practicing astral projection or whether they are tripping on mushrooms or whatever. They meet these entities that claim to be their friend or claim to be a spirit guide or, you know, that kind of thing. But there are so many cases of people becoming possessed or being raped or being probed, you know, and a lot of times
being taken advantage of.
Right. And a lot of times these people will do these drugs or they will astral project because they have been deceived and they believe that they're going to be able to contact aliens.
Or reach enlightenment.
Yeah, there's numerous reasons. I mean, but for the purpose of this podcast episode, right. A lot of people think that they can contact aliens by astral projecting or doing psychedelic drugs because they have been deceived into thinking that aliens are so much more intelligent that they're like, they have transcended our reality and that they're on a different level of consciousness and intelligence. You can't talk to them like with a regular language.
Different vibration.
That's very New Age too. Vibrations and, you know, energies and that kind of stuff. Very New Age. And what I'm getting at is that there's been a there's so many accounts of people trying this stuff and being again raped or you know abused and these trips that they're having or these dreams or whatever, and that is, you know, in my opinion, that is the behavior of demonic entities, and I don't think it's safe. So I did want to put my two cents into that, but I also find it really interesting, you know, and very mysterious. So,
well, at the end of the day, the use of psychedelic drugs, like what we saw with the Montauk Project, is they were literally using psychedelic drugs and ritual satanic abuse,
right,
to break the mind to be able to be open to that realm,
right.
To open those bodies for demonic possession.
I think that's what it's ultimately about.
To like energy absorption.
It's about breaking the mind. And, you know, I mean, there's also a lot of, there is another side to the coin. I've heard stories and accounts of people using psychedelics to like, you know, break hard drug addictions. You know, I have heard positive stories about psychedelics. Some people have used psychedelics and they went from being an atheist to believing in God. But again,
well, like that's what I was about to say. So look, like there's like what you said, two sides to a coin. If you can use psychedelics to reach a plane of consciousness where there are demons, yeah. Well, then it's given that there's angels there too.
Sure.
So yeah, you probably can come into contact with enlightened beings or beings of light or angels or good vibrations. And even enlightenment, like, why couldn't you? I feel like it's a very real possibility, and that's what could happen. But also, like, what are you more likely to run into if you don't know what you're doing?
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's dangerous, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners who are listening to this right now are probably like, what the heck? We were talking about UFOs, and now we're... But this stuff is, like... I wanted to use this case as an opportunity to kind of like transition into this conversation because it's more interesting. I'm sorry. It just is. It's way more fascinating and interesting. And it doesn't sound like it's the plot of a Hollywood movie, you know?
No. Well, I mean, and we have listeners from literally all walks of life. Like we have,
yeah.
at least just from what I've seen in the Into the Mortuary Facebook group, whenever I creep on y'all's Facebook profiles to like, be a creep.
Well, we make sure, like, you guys aren't bots, you know,
or like just spam accounts. Yeah. But I mean, I know that we have several members who openly use psychedelics and like are advocates for it. And I know that we have, you know, other listeners who are good Christian moms. You know what I'm saying? Like we have a huge range of people who listen to this podcast. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
It is.
But we're going to have our sets of beliefs and like, that's just how it is. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But
well, and if
we're offering a different insight or a different viewpoint from something that you may not have thought of before.
Yeah.
Or may not even been made aware of.
And please don't flood the group with posts about what psychedelics did for you and how it's fine if you want to, but we're really not interested.
Tanner's not interested.
There's a million stories I'm sure we can find on Google if we're interested. Just, you don't got to get defensive. It's fine. We're not judging you.
It's fine.
We're not judging you. Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think like was it when we've talked about that one, we've talked about, I mean, anytime we talk about something paranormal, we typically touch on spirit guides and astral projection too.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is that the government uses psychedelics as a weapon and as population control.
Yeah. And I don't think it's by any accident that someone like Joe Rogan, who is a huge voice in people's ears all the time in his podcast, it's not by accident that he is an advocate for DMT and psychedelic drugs and all that kind of stuff because
he's controlled.
Oh, Joe Rogan is 100% controlled opposition. I mean, you don't get to that point without being controlled.
But I mean, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, so is Alex Jones.
So is Alex Jones.
You know what I mean? Like, it goes rounds and rounds. It's all meant to disrupt. That's all they care about is disruption and chaos. And I mean, and that's why you have the fear porn. That's why you have politics. That's why you have all these different things to distract and to, what's the opposite of unify?
Divide?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, disunify? That's not right.
Yeah.
But to distract and divide. You know what I mean? Absolutely. And so, and like, it's just another weapon used. I feel like the government knows what they're doing when it comes to psychedelics now.
Oh, dude, if you look into the history of it, I mean, the CIA sent dudes over to South America to literally do psychedelics with some of the people in the Amazon and stuff like that, yeah. Different tribes down there, just so they could bring that stuff back, learn how to use it against the public.
Yeah.
So,
or to make MKUltra slaves.
Right. So you know? Just, you're not as countercultural as you think just because you've, you know, listened to Joe Rogan and do psychedelics. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to offend anyone. I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings, but. Anyway, we got to get out of here.
We do?
Yes.
Why?
It's just that time.
I'm enjoying the conversation.
it's fun, but we'll have another opportunity.
I don't want to leave.
I know.
Tanner.
I'm hungry and I got to go scared. Home. But do we have some reviews?
And frick. Dude, okay. So I'm sorry. Whenever we did the call-in episode last, we didn't do any reviews or patron shout-outs.
Okay.
So we have 2 5-stars, 1 1-star. That are new.
No, we have a 1-star?
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I posted it in the Enter the Mortuary Facebook group.
Oh, I must have missed it. I must have not seen it.
No, you commented on it. Okay, so our first 5-star comes from Barnes 23. So good, 5 stars. Love these guys. Keep it up, legends. From Australia. Legends. Love our Australian listeners. I love our UK listeners and our Australian listeners. And also, side note, whenever we did, I think it was the Kellyanne Bates episode, we have gotten such a big response to our ignorance to UK terminology.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we still get comments on our YouTube videos and stuff telling us what House Proud means and stuff like that. And so I'm really grateful for all our UK listeners to
help us with our ignorance. I say, why don't you just enjoy your tea and crumpets and leave us alone?
Oh, my God.
And your fish and chips.
Stop it.
And your tiddlywickers and your noddly.
Why are you doing this?
I'm just kidding. You know I'm kidding.
I love fish and chips. You remember London Express food truck?
Yeah.
Terry,
I never ate there,
over in the UK now, he moved back to the UK. He really? Doesn't live here anymore. But Terry, if by chance you listen to this podcast, I miss your fish and chips, dude.
Oh my goodness.
It was the absolute best. Okay, so next 5-star, Eternia E11 says, you live! 5 stars. Yes, daddy, yes! That's it. That's
yes,
all that,
daddy, yes.
That's all that review is. And then this one comes from Mystery Mock. Do you want me to read the 1-star?
Yeah, I want you to read it.
Horribly misinformed. These guys actually believe Pizzagate was a thing and still believe
I remember this.
The McMartin preschoolers, even though the main witnesses was a schizophrenic and the children grew up into adults who said that none of it happened, they actually say children don't lie about this stuff, even though it's been proven by science and the children themselves that it happens all the time. All the time. Really disappointed that people are this stupid and slinging this out for other people to be stupid too. Ergegious.
By the way, this is definitely not John Podesta. This is so not John Podesta. I am so far away from being John Podesta that I am not John Podesta.
You're convinced that John Podesta left us that 1-star review.
And this is definitely not the CIA.
Or Hillary Clinton.
Or Hillary.
That's what she sounds like.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
That was good.
Oh, anyways, so there's that. And then we have 40 patron shout outs to do. So
just ramble them off, please.
I'm going to, geez. Wow. How about a little bit of love for the patrons, Tanner?
I do love them.
So here we go. We're almost to 400, by the way. So if you're not a patron, become a patron. Help us out. Thanks. Big shout out to Celeste, Cherish, Alondra, Jonathan, Heather, Fausto, Alex, Megan, Brittany. Sorry, it's spelled weird. It's like Brittany, bitch. Adele, Alex, Irene, Ashley, what's up, duo? Amy, Jay, that's a username, what's up, duo. I wasn't saying what's up to Ashley, but what's up, Ashley? Amy, Jay, Kimberly, Laura, Josela, Sarah, Summer, Annie, Gary, Natalie, Sabrina, Jamie, Valeria, Adi, Ryan, Wazma, Eric, Genevieve, Samantha, Keith, Al, Joe, Joyce, Brandy, and Michael.
Yeet.
Complete. Wonderful. Patrons, thank you so much for your support. Hey, we have our 100th episode coming up, and I'm so freaking excited about it. We're still figuring out what we're going to do for it. We've gotten some pretty good suggestions from listeners in the Into the Mortuary Facebook group. So if you're not in that group, go join the group to throw in your 2 cents for what you think the 100th episode should entail. I've reached out to some movie stars, and I'm sure I'll be getting a response soon. You know, I really have reached out to movie stars, but I doubt I'll get a response. So, I'm not offering any money. So, you know, that's pretty much the kicker.
Yep.
All right. Well, we will see you patrons next week. Everyone else, let me see. Well, shit, if you're not a patron, we'll see you for our 100th episode.
Ooh.
This is 98. Next week's 99. Then 100.
Awesome.
All right. This is Brock Baird signing off.
And this is Tanner Coker also signing off. Goodbye.